Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. It's nice to have you with us today. We're going to take a dive into some deep water today. We're going to learn about adult stem cells and showing how when you use fish oil can help with depression, University of Illinois, published in the peer-reviewed journal Molecular Psychiatry. But beyond the health and nutrition today, I'm going to share my own views of how to deal with some of the crisis we're having without tearing society apart. We need unity, not divisiveness. And yet there's so many hidden interests and the deep state's interest in keeping people divided, where everything today now is about racism. For 3 years, it was about Russia. Now it's about racism. And it's not. It goes much deeper than that. So today, from Chris Hedges, a commentary gaslighted by the ruling class, we are trapped in an abusive relationship. When we finally have enough, our abuser comes after us with flowers and apologies, promising never do it again. Well, this is a special to sharepost.com by Chris Hedges. I'll share that. But I've also written my own essay today, and I'm going to share it as well. I want people to understand that society's crisis goes deeper than bad police. And if you make that every single one of the 800,000 more or less police are racist and abusive and they deserve to die, and what do we like, dead cops? When do we like them now? That shows the immaturity of a movement, one that is bound to fail. But it will cause a lot of harm, frequently to those who can least protect themselves, but it also causes an enormous rift. It's not a part of a solution. Violence does not beget a good solution. If only we had a real Martin Luther King today, or for that matter, Malcolm X. I heard it, but I didn't get the source of it. I will find it. I'm going to ask Jesse to start looking. It was a comment about Malcolm X speaking about how the liberal class is the most dangerous class, because it pretends to be something it's not. And the people who control the liberal class, the major corporations, the media, they've abused African-American people. And then he gave examples. I should have written it down, the source. I will find it. I will play it for you, and then we'll have a dialogue on why we should believe either the Democrats or Republicans, and I don't believe either. Why we should believe the liberals or the conservatives, and I don't believe either. Because, like most Americans who don't support either of these, and I don't, I support independent, they are the problem. I'm going to unwrap that today for you. And then you'll have a chance to call in and share your points of view. If time permits, a very interesting piece that we had this gentleman on the air a couple of times. He's got a really great background in union organizing. He is a populist. He has been in thousands of demonstrations, and he is what you would call a 1960s liberal, which is different than a liberal today, which is just a corporatist and a neoliberal. And he has something to say about the people behind Black Lives Matter, not out of anger, but rather out of understanding why that's not the solution. It's an interesting commentary. If I don't have time today, I'll do it tomorrow. Or this week we'll have him on as a guest so you can see what's behind the scenes. Well, when you got the Ford Foundation giving $100 million to the founders, they don't give money unless they can control outcomes and control directions. Remember, the Ford Foundation, for those who are too naive to not understand this, they're a part of the deep state. They've got connections with the World Bank, with the CIA, with Homeland Security. Oh, yeah, they're up to their eyeballs. They're major players, just like Rockefeller University people. So his article published on Truthdig is called "What Would the Black Panthers Think of Black Lives Matter?" Really thought-provoking, deeply inspired way of taking down the walls of pretense and looking at the reality of something. Anyhow, so that's why I said we're going to get to a lot of these on today's show. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. Excuse my voice. I was counseling last night for hours. I just didn't even pay attention to the time because no matter where I'm at, I always help terminally ill people. And there just seems to be an awful lot of them today, more than I've ever seen before. I mean, I try to get to as many people as I can, but my goodness, there are hundreds and hundreds suddenly now with life-ending conditions. So, little horse, that's all. A study published in the Current Molecular Psychiatry shows that patient-derived adult stem cells can be used to model major depressive disorder, and it finds that it helps with depression. And that's good. But there's a lot of things you can do beyond fish oil, which is easy to get. It's a natural product. It's non-toxic. And a professor, distinguished professor of physiology and biophysics and psychiatry at the College of Medicine, talked about this. So they're not saying, well, you can't change your behavior. You can, but they used these cells, and that helped people with depression. Now, here's what we found. That's good. I'm glad they did that. But we took a group of people. Everyone to get into the study had to qualify by having medical proof, meaning letters from their psychiatrist or psychologist. They had been clinically depressed at a high-end stage, meaning they were able to function but not well. Many had been homebound. Many were lonely and desperate. We could hold 500 people in the auditorium. It was a church at 86th Street and West End Avenue. And we met every week for 3 months. And we kept the whole 500 people the whole time. Now, that's rare. Normally, after people see that this is a serious clinical study and you've got to do your homework, you don't get back into the door the next week. And we mean it. We had a group of nurses and physicians at the door, and when people streamed in, where's your homework? Oh, I didn't do it. Sorry. Go home and do it, then come back next week. So then everybody started realizing, yeah, I got to be responsible. I'm just not going to come in here, Gary, do some talking. So it's what you do with that information. Well, the first thing we did a detoxification, meaning we eliminated all toxins, every toxicant within a person's diet, meaning all meats, all dairy, all fish, all wheat, all alcohol, caffeine, all deep fried foods, and they went on a living foods diet. That was the first thing. They juiced high levels of juice, especially the green juices that chelate out heavy metals, and that helped. Then we worked on the liver and the kidneys, and that made a big difference. And then by week 4, we spent the rest of the time, the whole summer, on behavior. Changing perception changes your reality, change your reality, and therefore you can make quantum change. At the end of it, every person on day 1 had to get up in front of a camera, give their name, age, and what their symptoms were. On the last day, they had to do the same thing. So then we have a split screen. I haven't even edited this stuff yet. It's one of those, I've done so much filming and so much studies, I got to catch up on myself. But the results were that we had a 93% complete reversal or gross improvement to the point where a person no longer felt depressed. We followed it up at 6 months and a year. It maintained itself because the people went home motivated and inspired with new tools of behavior, no longer feeling self-deprecation, no longer feeling sorry for themselves, no longer feeling that somehow they were a victim. And no matter what their earlier victimization was, you got to get beyond that. You have to have something, as Viktor Frankl, by the way, who in my opinion is one of the greatest minds of the 20th century, bar none. He was a physician. He was in 5 concentration camps. And it was his observations as a young boy that the people who survived the concentration camps were the ones who had something to live for that was greater than the pain and the scourge of abuse that they were tolerating at that moment. So imagine in the 1950s and 60s, he began to write, and he was a prolific writer, and he was a measured commentator. He would go on, all you'd have to do is ask him one question. Go back and Google Viktor Frankl, and then look at some of his best interviews, He might be asked one or two questions. He would then unfold the story of what prevents people from self-actualization. In my opinion, he's right beside Rollo May and Eric Fromm, two other great minds. And then Marty Shepard, coming later, Carmi Harari, Elaine Kahn, Albert Ellis, Donald Mullen, many. And many of those were my close personal friends. Elaine Kahn for 40 years, Donald Mullen at the Albert Ellis Center. So these were all people who were humanistic. They didn't look at you as if you were a disease, a broken down machine. They look at you as a vital person who simply needed to be rebalanced. And none of them believed in rebalancing just with pharmacological drugs. And so talk therapy and exercise, but what we found, we put it all together in this study, and it reversed it. Now, in the anti-aging study, three of the people came who had had lifelong depression, crippling depression, and all of them reversed their depression. They had zero Hamilton scale depression scores when they left. Some had 10 when they arrived, the highest point on that scale. So just for the people out there, if you're suffering from depression and anxiety, and you've tried all the meds, Prozac, Effexor, Zoloft, before you ever take another med, read the package insert, and you'll see with antidepressants, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, your number one side effect is, for depression, depression. Now think of that for a moment. You're taking a drug to help you overcome depression, yet you're likely to become depressed from the medication. It's like AZT. You're taking AZT, DNA terminating killer drug, and the number one side effect is not just a humpback or the massive thrush, but it creates AIDS. So how in the world would you know a person was suffering from AIDS, HIV infected, or the drug? And you wouldn't. And that's why so many lost their lives, especially HIV positive, but otherwise asymptomatic and healthy people. So you see, our medical paradigm has betrayed us. And yet people have not had the courage to stand up and challenge it, call it out. Yeah, everything that is done to another human being because of their religion or because of their race or education or class status, that's all wrong, morally wrong, reprehensibly wrong. But put all that abuse, and each day American medicine kills more people than all the cops in a year. All the deaths, of all races in the United States by the police each year, you have twice as many Americans killed by their doctors. And yet one is talked about, rightly so, challenged as it should be, called out for what it is, good. And the other, you get out of jail free. No criticism, no panels, no committee, no congressional hearings. Just keep killing people. How many people have they killed through iatrogenesis? Well, we did the math. We did the definitive scholarly article. It's cited all over the world. Death by medicine. If you haven't read it, go up and read it. It's free. It's there. We only use their statistics. If you average on some years 700,000, 800,000, other years, 400,000, let's just take the last 40 years in most of your lifetimes. Since most of the people listening right now, since you were born, that's 20 million Americans. 20 million Americans is a massive genocide. Now you're up there with Stalin. You're up there with Mao. You're up there with total casualties, less than in Germany. You really go far beyond Pol Pot and his killing fields. Not a word. And yet it's acknowledged. The AMA acknowledged it. But nothing done. No criticism. So isn't it interesting that we will not tolerate something and shouldn't, but we tolerate something and we shouldn't? So isn't it time that we just pull back from everything and start looking for the truth? So I'm glad they did this study with fish oil. Why don't they read the peer-reviewed published article I did on reversing depression, and so they could get up to date? But they're not going to, because that's not the way science, universities, or medicine. My God, they're like dinosaurs intellectually. They're just stupid to the bone. That's unfortunate, because it doesn't mean they're not nice people. It's not a moral judgment. It's just that when you're paid to do certain research and there's an expectation of a certain outcome, and pharmaceutical companies or Bill Gates Foundation is paying for it, you're going to pay careful attention to what expectations they have and what outcomes they expect. And that's why there's so much fraudulent research in drugs. And then you end up being the victim. From Purdue University is a better study. Purdue, by the way, is out in West Lafayette, Indiana. Comes a research that shows that blueberries and the polyphenols in blueberries improve calcium absorption. Okay, that's good. So take some blueberries each day, or blueberry concentrates. That works also. From the University of Eastern Finland and the University of Madrid, two universities came up with a study that was published in Seminars in Cancer Biology that showed vitamin D has anti-cancer properties. But there are a lot more studies showing that it's good against cancer. This was cancer of the liver specifically. So get your vitamin D. Also, vitamin D, according to University of Lodz, which is in Poland, has a protective effect against triple-negative breast cancer. Now, that's a tough cancer to deal with. So it's good to know that vitamin D could help with that. Well, if vitamin D is beneficial and non-toxic and can help against triple-negative breast cancer, what would it do to help prevent triple-negative breast cancer? That's something we should consider. Also, by adding dietary nitrate from beets to salty foods, it helps prevent salt-induced hypertension. Now, this is a brand new study published in the American Heart Association Journal of Hypertension. And according to this laboratory study, tiny amounts of beetroot or juice or powder that has the nitrate in it, when someone's having a salty diet, can help prevent hypertension or high blood pressure. That's terrific. So even if we have family members that will not stop eating their comfort foods, which are salty, just ask them to, you know, have some beet juice. You can buy beet juice anywhere. It's inexpensive. Just say, would you have a 4-ounce glass of beet juice today? You could help them. For all of you who are using silicone, well, according to Radboud University in the Netherlands, published in Scientific Reports, silicon molecules from breast implants can initiate processes in human cells that lead to cell death. All right? One more reason to be very conscientious when they put that silicon in your body. And if you end up having what's known as breast implant bleeds, i.e. silicon molecules from the implant pass through the shell and enter the body, that can cause cancer. So that's not good. And from Erasmus University in the Netherlands, University of Valencia, which is in Spain, regular physical activity can maintain or improve frailty. Frailty is a medical term for becoming weaker or experiencing lower levels of activity or energy. And becoming frail as we age increases our risk of poor health, falls, disability, and other concerns. So the normal way we age, which is not normal for aging, but normal for the way we age, increases the risk of becoming frail. We spend too much time sitting and not enough activity to help us. This was published in the Journal of American Geriatric Society. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to share a commentary. It's an essay. It's published up on prn.fm, where we publish all of our different articles, and they're free. They're there, and videos as well. A lot of self and hopefully inspiring videos. We're going to play one a little later if time permits. We'll be back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. Growing up in the small West Virginia city of Parkersburg was like living in peaceful times where everyone knew their neighbors. The police did not wear bulletproof vests, carry semi-automatic weapons and taser guns, or bring in armored vehicles when there were social disturbances. There were no SWAT teams breaking down doors, nor racial profiling through stop and frisk policies. People prided themselves knowing there was a police officer living in their neighborhood. We all attended the same schools. The only segregated street which was no longer segregated, was called Summer Street. Yet all that changed after the Second World War. In 1950, my best friend Tony Bartlett, who was an African-American, we lived just a half a block away, and if there was any racism, it was silent, hidden. I'm sure there was. However, I was just a kid, too young to appreciate the African-American experience of systemic and repressive racism. What I did know was that the police force could assure law and order without ever unholstering their guns. My godfather, Russell Mowry, who was the chief of police, he said that for the majority of nonviolent crimes, there was no need either A, to make an arrest, or certainly not be heavy-handed in the tactics. Rather, these were misdemeanors due to poor judgment by neighbors and could be handled peacefully. Now, I know that for a fact because as a kid, I would be over playing with Russ Mowry, his son, and he would be sitting there talking with people who had committed some indiscretion, and he would talk to them in ways that, hey, you don't want, you know, you don't want to be looked upon as a criminal, do you? So I'm not going to arrest you, but I want you to go do this for this person. Now, whatever person's skills were, then he would have them go help another person who needed help, generally someone who was poor in the community. This, we were all working class people, but he had a long history, as did other people, of not wanting to cause a person to be, in effect, viewed upon as that rotten apple, because there were always those people that way. They don't fall far from the tree, and therefore you're blaming the father, the mother, the whole family, and casting a negative shadow on people who merely had someone who acted out inappropriately. So crime was of low importance where I grew up. I also recall a time when a particularly tough family with four teenage kids moved a few doors away from us, and they were getting into some trouble. They were stealing bikes. They had bullied some kids. They beat up a kid. And so finally when my mother found out about it, she and a couple of the neighbors, they invited the mother over for a discussion. And I had a chance to eavesdrop on that conversation. Again, I was young, and I'm on the steps looking through the spindles and hearing them talk. And my mother very calmly explained that we were a community. I remember her saying several times, we're a community here. We're all different. We have blacks and whites. We have Baptists, Catholics, Jehovah's Witnesses, Jews, and other religious persuasions, and atheists. We respect each other. Nevertheless, we're also everyone's neighbor. When a child's playing in the streets here, when there's a water balloon fight, when they're out, someone's always got their eye on them. And it doesn't matter if they don't have a kid. We care about our neighborhood. We care about our neighbors. You never have to ask us to come and help. If we know someone needs help, it's our moral responsibility to go and help. And the woman's just sitting there. And she said, no child's ever been abused here. We don't have kidnappings. And only now are we seeing bullying. Break-ins don't happen. They're non-existent. And hence, nobody has to lock their doors or bring anything in from the yard at night. No one's going to steal them. Because, again, we're a neighborhood. We care about each other. Well, the woman didn't say much. And the tone was civil. And so what my mother was saying is, we're welcoming you here. Please understand our standards. And the woman came from what, well, let's just say it was, historically we would have called it the other side of the tracks. She was poor, uneducated, absent of social manners, and that was her whole family. But it was the belief we all grew up with that everyone deserves to be accepted. Invite everyone to your table. Now, if they don't want to be at your table, that's a different story. If they abuse everyone at your table, you have a right to say, then step away from my table to understand and appreciate the gift of friendship, the gift of community that you've been given. Well, over the next year, we became friends. Those bully guys became buddies, and we introduced them to all of our friends. As a result, they weren't looked upon any longer as people who were troublemakers. They were looked at as just, you know, they were going through that period of life that a lot of us go through when we're growing up. We're not very bright, and we don't make the best decisions, but that changed. And so jump forward to today. And by the way, that family ended up being a very nice family. And there are still thousands of neighborhoods across this great country that care about their quality of life and respecting each's property and the values. If you don't, you know, if you live in a community where you know your neighbors, almost all communities in America, people get to know one another. They create social networks. And when you look at what these people are going through, especially when you travel around America, when I was for 7 years filming Poverty Inc., and then now I'm filming the sequel to Poverty Inc., Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And so we're all over the place. I mean, this coming next 2 months, I'm going to be traveling in a trailer going, or RV. I'm going to be filming hundreds, if not thousands of people across America, what it's like today in the midst of COVID and in the midst of lost jobs. How are they coping? What are they doing? Offering different solutions, including the move to rural America, which is probably the single most important thing people can do if they want sanity and some safety and sanctuary in the future. But the average person's a pretty decent person. We've grown up together, all kinds of races and ethnicities and backgrounds. And as long as you start by respecting the quality of life of the other person and you act in some, you know, at least mature manner, then you get along. There's always going to be people who choose not to. There's always going to be the braggart, the boaster. There's going to be the alpha male or female that want to dominate and control everything. There's going to be those with hidden agendas. But they are not the majority. The vast majority of people I've ever met in my life are decent human beings from all races, all walks of life, all backgrounds. Nobody can tell me that's not true because it's my life. I'm the person who has been there. It's not something I read out of a book or magazine. If you've traveled as much around this world, as met as many people as I have, and sat and filmed them with long conversations, you get to see that most of us have pretty much the same concerns, go through similar things, unless you're very rich or a professional class. Then you're in bubbles. That's different. Yes, America today suffers from a problem of racism in local law enforcement. And of course, this does not refer to all police. I want to make that abundantly clear. The larger problem is the perversion of our justice system. Three strikes and you're out. Lock them up and throw away the key. Imprisonment is punishment, not rehabilitation. The entire justice system, from the death penalty to putting people in jail for minor drug offenses, from private prison corporations to overzealous judges, counties and states determined to keep them full for greater profit and attorneys acting solely in their own self-interest rather than the greater interests of society has become the viruses that infect our entire judiciary. The Clintons, the Bushes, the Obamas, and now the Trump have contributed to the creation of a judicial system that is thoroughly racial and class-based for dispensing justice and verdicts. Our politicians should be accused of crimes against humanity. All of our presidents, clear back to Eisenhower, should be accused of crimes against humanity. And these are including the rise of incarceration as a state policy, the ghettoization of America, privatization of public services, including schools, and the neoliberal agenda are not being addressed by either party, and certainly not honestly. It is the hidden force we refuse to acknowledge, a discriminatory social order that has destroyed once thriving communities, such as Camden and Baltimore and Detroit, and turned them into impoverished wastelands, except for the dark side of vulture capitalism that gentrifies neighborhoods for their own mobile professional class. The rest of the country is sinking. Now we are a dual system, a gated and protected wealthy class and the remainder who are disposable. Millions of dollars are handed out to militarized local law enforcement. Police officers can receive special training in Israel, which is brutal. All of this wasteful funding would be better served to bring jobs to communities, to create microloans at zero interest, and rehabilitate neighborhood blocks that can be providing a sense of meaning and purpose to its residents. In effect, everything our government and federal agencies touches turns sour, leading to high unemployment, the closing of factories and offshoring of jobs, to deep social angst, and as a result, different people handle it differently. Some rely upon gangs. Some rely upon selling drugs. How many people have ever been arrested who were selling drugs where a lot of the money that they got from selling drugs went to their mothers or fathers to pay for rent? We never ask these questions. Why would people engage in violence? Why would people do self-destructive things? Well, how about the people who have jobs, who don't have to worry about, are they going to have their next meal? Do they have a safe place to live? Do they have a good quality community? Can they go out and play without being beaten up or robbed? What if all Americans had that privilege? What if we didn't have a ruling class that decided it was more important to make extra money beyond what they could even spend in a billionaire class by becoming equity partners? What about all the people that work for, you know, the Wall Street firms that create the financial debt so companies can be bought? Thousands of companies bought, from Toys R Us to Macy's to Linens and Things to Circuit City, all closed. And millions upon millions of Americans that once had good neighborhoods, who had neighborhoods like I grew up in, and who then wouldn't look around and say, why are you joining that gang? What didn't we give you in this home? What didn't your community give you that you feel you have to act out in such a way? We're not even asking those questions. We either become a victim class, in which case we justify anything we do, or we become so filled with hubris and indifference that we start to sequester our energy instead of participating in social change that could bring back a heartbeat to these communities. We could change every community in America. We could make it thrive again. We wouldn't have to do the foolish notion of gentrification, which takes poor people and pushes them wherever they can be pushed, so that upper middle class people, the new wealth class, can have a place to stay and shops to shop in and gourmet restaurants to eat in. That just creates additional disparity. So as a result, in Baltimore, you have to drive through the ghettos to get to the nice places. In Detroit, the same way. To go over on the river, you have to drive through the ghettos. And West Palm Beach is 2 miles of ghetto to get to Palm Beach. So you have this enormous disparity. And this isn't by natural means. This is an artificial construct of neoliberal policies. And that's where your Clintons, and that's where your Bushes, and that's where your Obamas, and that's where your Trump go to mix and mingle. You didn't see Obama going into the ghetto of Washington, D.C. to live. You didn't know. They went to with a $13 million, more or less, mansion up in Martha's Vineyard. They're socializing with the people that gave them money, the Clintons, all these powerful people, not just the presidents, but all the retainers and sycophants around them. They don't care about you. They don't care about the unions. They lie about everything. They're pathological. They're sociopathic. And yet the media protects them. So the media creates the discourse. The media creates the talking points. The media justifies violence, rage, and negative outcome. And anything that stands in the way of that, like a positive voice, like a Chris Hedges, is denounced. And so it's just further division. It's an artificial battle being waged because they want a political outcome. And if they couldn't get it one way, they'll get it another way. So the anger young people feel today is substantially different than that experienced by we boomers when we were growing up. First, we did not suffer the kind of privations our parents did during the Great Depression and World War II. The average person was imbued with a sense of family values, community service, and character development. There were also resilient support systems within society. Today, woke boomers and the remaining survivors of the Great Depression look upon our government, corporate elite, institutions, and the media with a sense of betrayal. We feel the downtrodden and dispossessed, the millions of Americans who live paycheck to paycheck, and the 1 in 5 hungry homeless children, do they not count? In my world, they do. Everybody's life is sacred in my world, until you prove otherwise. Well, what happens if you start by showing respect and giving dignity and love to all people? What if you don't see them by their class or degree or wealth, ethnicity? What if you just see them as a soul? Then you can't harm them. You can't betray them. You can't profile them. You can't abuse them. Why aren't we at that level of conversation? Why has everything been captured by small political elitists and then use it as a hammer to bash everyone? Until you've been in everyone's home of all ethnicities, until you've gone to little Italy and Chinatown and little Korea and the Indian section on Lexington Avenue in the 20s, until you've gone to Appalachia, until you've gone to all the white communities and know what it's like to be them, to see their lives and what they've suffered through, what right do you have to condemn them? You don't. That is the height of a warped ego. And it then means that you're creating an other versus us. We are right, and if you don't align with us, you're wrong, and we must demonize you. That only leads to further conflict. It doesn't heal. You don't heal by bashing people, trashing people, denigrating people. You heal by conciliation and understanding how much we have in common, and look at who's playing us. Who's playing everybody? The left and the right are. Who controls the left and the right? The neoliberalists. Who are they? Well, look at the CIA and look at the Homeland Security and look at the banks and look at the big pharmaceutical companies and look at the energy cartels and look at the Walmarts and look at the major chains. Who owns these? That's who the enemy is. Not your next door neighbor. It was interesting because where I grew up, there was a family named Smiths, and they lived a block away. They were the police. And he would go around to people's homes, and then on Sunday in Bible school, and he would ask people, any problems, anything you need help with. And he would come there out of uniform and help you. I don't care what your needs were. And everyone was happy to know that we had one living in our neighborhood. And that was the way it was where I grew up. And that's the way it could be again if we only hired police from a neighborhood. And if they didn't wear armored vests and they just dressed as if they were peacekeepers. And they went into the neighborhoods because that's where they came from. And they spoke with people daily. That would be their job. Walk the beat and talk with people and say, I'm here to see what's wrong and what can I do to make it right. How can we help make this a better community, a safer community, more viable community? Why are we afraid to do that? Because who would profit from it? Who do you think profits from all of the guns and tasers and vests and armor carriers? Everyone who profits has lobbyists, and the lobbyists control the local politicians, the community boards. They control so much. And then the victims are society that see these cyborgs in their streets, and you're there protesting peacefully, loudly, yes. With demands for change, yes. But you're peaceful. The ones who are not peaceful, they're not there to protest racial inequality. They're there for their own political and ideological agendas. But you're there peaceful. Do you want to see a person, you have nothing but a banner, and they have guns? That's not what you want to see, and that's not how you resolve issues. So what we have is we have constantly to remind ourselves the crisis at hand is far greater than racism. It is also income and social inequality. Neoliberal vultures that feed on the suffering of ill health of the masses is the real enemy, who exploit the trust of others to gain power and use that power against us. Our entire social system and institutions are guilty as charged. Boycotts must begin against the mainstream media and all of our major financial institutions. Stop using their banks. Stop listening to their media. They lie. They manipulate. You don't have an honest journalist in any of these media. They all lie. Politicians and policymakers need to be held accountable. Throw them all out of office. I mean, all of them. Tell them all to go to hell and find someone, a local person that has ethics, morality, and who will not be compromised. Remove all these bastards, and I mean all of them, every single politician at the state, local, community boards, not the community boards, but the city councils. You talk about a corrupt group of people. Look at New York City's city council. Then see how, what rights you have as a small business person against the power of the landlords who have a stranglehold on all businesses. That didn't happen by accident. The state politicians capitulated, the governors capitulated, and the council capitulated, and the mayors capitulated. They don't represent you. They've never represented you. So throw the bastards out. We need legislators who are not beholden to any corporate interest that compromises their judgment. When we stop buying into the neoliberal lies, an oligarchical control slips away. If anyone wonders why the nation is so angry, screaming and protesting, it is because the failed neoliberal experiment, the culture of political nepotism, a captured and biased media, and a thoroughly corrupt judiciary has created this horror show. From the U.S. State Department, the Justice Department, the CIA, the FBI, it is all corrupt, not just the 1%. It is 99% corrupt because they all have been engaged in this for decades and gotten away with it. And it's only now that they're showing their hand because they feel they can. Just like the last 3 years, every single day, Adam Schiff and all these dancing clowns, these freaks of nature, were on CNN, a despicable station, and MSNBC and Fox, and all of them said the same thing. You know, we have the proof. What did we just find out 3 weeks ago? They didn't. They lied. Because in secret testimony, under the House Intelligence Committee, under oath, not a single one said that they had any proof of Russian collusion. Not a single one. Now they've been brought in again, but this time not in secret, in public hearings, and they've reaffirmed they had no evidence whatsoever. Then we were played by everybody because it was a coup. Now, I don't like Donald Trump for all the reasons I've stated on 100 occasions, but I like a coup less by the people in power, because then we would never know how bad things were. At least now, this clown, he can't do a single thing right. He's a functional illiterate. But you have very smart people who want that control, because then they just gain more power for themselves, and you have no authority over your own life. They have 100% authority. Remember, it was, remember search and seizure? Remember, asset forfeiture? Billions of dollars a year stolen by the police under Obama and Eric Holder. Did they change it? No. National Defense Authorization Act, where they can arrest you and kill you. No trial. They can, the President of the United States has the authority to say you die today. But what if I'm innocent? We don't care if you're innocent. Where's the, my accuser? You won't know your accuser. Where's my evidence? Let me present my defense. You have no defense. That's how draconian that law is. I've read it. You read it for yourself. Why didn't anyone challenge it? Why didn't any members of the legislature challenge it? Why do they keep reinforcing and voting for the Patriot Act, including Bernie Sanders and these other clowns? Because they know that the public has removed themselves from any scholarship or investigation of the truth of anything. We are more likely to vote for someone by how they look than the quality of their character and what they've done to show that they care about the people. So that's what we have to do so that we don't limit our anger and screaming and protesting to just race. Pull back far enough. And the reason we have race issues is because we have the wrong justice system, the wrong policing system, the wrong training system. We have the wrong economic system. We have vulture capitalism that will eat your heart out. And that's why we have poverty, massive poverty of all races. What can you say to a child that leaves school and has no home to go back to, and that day will not have enough food and will go to bed hungry? And there's 17 million of those kids. Do they not count? They should, shouldn't they? Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. My article, Society's Crisis, goes deeper than bad police. And let me give you the number. You call in at 888-874-4888. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Tomorrow, the man behind LanceaGate, a breaking science scandal of global ramifications, Dr. James Todaro, medical doctor. He was the one who found that the Lance had published a false story, and they had to retract it. It is a major worldwide scandal. We're going to have it tomorrow. Also, we're being told now, with new information, that 60% of people are fairly immune. They're not going to be affected by the coronavirus. And we're told that the death toll is far, far less than what we were told, the accurate numbers. So everything we've been told about corona, we're going to have a catch-up and recorrection tomorrow. But now, I want to end this show on a positive note, because a lot of you are trying to find happiness in an unhappy world. This is part three of a three-part series. You can go up to prn.fm and download them for yourself. But this will give you a little idea. And you can watch it by going to prn.fm right now in real time, because I believe we need happiness in order to solve our problems. We need to feel happy about ourselves and realize that we have an abundance of good people in this world. We have an abundance of love. We have an abundance of tolerance. We have an abundance of acceptance. We have an abundance of non-prejudiced, non-biased people trying to live in. Why are they never given an opportunity to be shown and their stories told? That shows you who's controlling the whole outrage. And yes, as a whole nation, we all have something to be angry about, but we also better start appreciating what we have to feel good about. Now, to this. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to a continuing part of our series on self-empowerment. Today, the topic is how to find happiness in an unhappy world. Without purpose, we resign ourselves to apathy. So a part of happiness is having purpose, a constructive, positive purpose in our lives. Think of all the things that your life could mean to yourself and others if you simply kept focused on a meaningful, positive purpose. It's not about money or education. It's not about social standing. It's not about even special gifts or talents. But it's about meaningfulness of purpose. So if I know that I'm a good person, and if I know that I'm a happy person, then just being happy and a good person and being able to live my life in balance means I'm not going to imbalance anyone else. I'm not going to do anything else that's going to adversely affect another human being. That's meaningful.
How do you have a good life? And how do you make a difference? And, you know, there's so many ways to look at that. And one of the most important is to ask yourself, what's your purpose for being here? And is your purpose to be part of a whole and try to make that whole better? Or is your purpose just to grab as much as you can for yourself? And there is some research that shows that people who see themselves as part of a whole, where they try to improve that whole, end up being happier than people who just try to accumulate for themselves. And when I look at what makes a significant or good life, the question is almost always like a retrospective one. Like, did you make a difference somewhere? Did what you do help people? Were you able to love? Did, in some way, is the world better for your having been here?
Think if everyone did something consciously. So if I don't need something, I'm not going to buy it. Therefore, I'm not polluting in an excess way. That's being conscious. That's being mindful. So when you're mindful and you're conscious of every choice you make, the world is a better place. It's three short segments where I've brought in other people, and they're what you can't, unless you're watching it, you can't know that there are famous quotes from people spread throughout these talks also. Just short little things to let us realize there are positive things to do in this world, and we can if we get out of a negative mindset. It's not as if you can't address social issues and still be positive. You can. But now we have two callers, and we're finishing up our show today. I'm going to apologize to the stations run a little over, but I want to hear from Jeremiah and Ken. Ken from New York, your thoughts, please.
Yes, Gary, I love you. I miss you. I miss your upstate farm I used to come up to on the weekend. I miss you were so open and so giving and loving, and we don't see that today. We don't see people intimately inviting people into their homes. You invited me into your place on 86th Street. okay, back in the 80s. You invited me to the Upstate Farm. You had people that were lecturing. You had the ponies there. I ran with your daughter. It was such a profound and life-changing experience. And guess what? I can't even replicate that today. People are different. The level of closeness and intimacy and interrelatedness, I just don't see it any longer. I'm laughing because what you just said about happiness and helping the poor and the elderly, I get paid to do that now because I am a physiotherapist. And I take people who are, I beg them to come out for walks, and I beg them to go shopping for them, and I beg them to do that because, people get paid to do that as an aid. However, I do it for free for people because they need that more than just a business relationship with someone that's getting paid to provide them with amenities and services. So you are absolutely dead on, Gary. You know, I remember in the book, the Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I remember the author referred to what he called chautauquas. Chautauquas, they would, where they would, during the late 18th century, they would come in a tent and you'd have speakers and pastors and thinkers, out in the rural communities. And they would make, they would bake pies and cakes and so forth. And that tent would be there, or that number of tents would be there for weeks on end. And that's how people in the rural communities got new information. That's how they were educated, because there was no television. You only had books at that time. And I miss those conferences you used to have. I miss those people that you used to have. There are things that I remember, Gary. That first weekend I went up to your place upstate. They were just life-changing. You had the sauna that was there. You had no television in there. I loved it. And it was just such a beautiful environment that was healing. So then I was working on Wall Street. I was working for American Express, and the intensity of the work and the push. So it was coming up to your farm upstate was a restorative experience. And I want to thank you for it.
Ken, we're out of time, and I still want to speak with Jeremiah real quick. But understand something, that still exists today. I've had since then over 500 homeless people I've invited into my homes and helped them. Hopefully most of them were able to reenter society with a sense of integrity and dignity and get back into work. And I'm working right now on an intentional community down in Texas. It's happening as we speak, where people can come together with other like-minded people and laugh and have joy and work on projects for themselves. The future is we. So
yes.
The future is we, and it's happening. More on that on an upcoming show. But thank you, Ken, for calling in. Jeremiah, I'm sorry we have very little time, but please, I want you to have a chance to have your say-so.
Thank you, Gary. You are on fire today, by the way. But I just wanted to say, from a community perspective, I live in Harlem, and I was just walking down Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard just last night, and there was a huge gathering of police. They were like in little clusters of 5 to 7 cops. And meanwhile, they're just not engaged in the community around them. There's people on the adjacent avenue launching firecrackers and keeping people up till after 1 in the morning. And they don't intervene at any point, but we're hemorrhaging money as a city on 125th Street and Adam Clayton Powell, with cops just literally standing around doing nothing, chatting with each other while they're on their cell phones. So, I just think the snuff movies that the police are creating that horrify the nation, we talk about that, and then we never get an opportunity to talk about the absurdities that we see in just day-to-day policing and just their poor protocol or lack of protocol.
You are correct, but there are solutions. Now we
there
have
are.
To put our energy onto solutions. Remember what I said? The only police should be hired come from the neighborhood and stay in the neighborhood and are not going up there with any kind of armaments so nobody feels threatened by them, and they're there as peace officers to stop problems, to relate with people, because when people have someone they can talk with to talk about their problems, not just a call on 911, then you can have an opportunity for solutions. Then you put buildings up there. You repurpose buildings. You have a drug rehab center. You have a gang rehab center. You have a senior citizen center. You have a center for progress. You have a center, a whole block or two blocks or 10 blocks of new businesses that are based on microloans, so everyone who has a good idea has a chance to see that idea manifest, where the government is not is actually giving them an opportunity and landlords are not destroying them. You know, there's so many good things we can do if we join together to do it. All right. We have to have our voices heard. Those of us, I don't apologize from coming from the teachings of Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Malcolm X. I don't apologize for people who believe that, yes, we're going to be faced with a lot of torrents of criticism for wanting to do things in a peaceful way. But I see progress from peace and love. Love your neighbor, even if you don't understand them. How are you going to understand someone of a different culture, different race, different class, different educational basis, unless you have the patience to sit and talk with that person to see what it's like to be in their shoes? We need more compassion. We need more empathy. We need more love. We need to see abundance in character given to people who may not have experienced in their life, maybe abuse and neglect and fear and profiling. We need to show those people that there is a better world because we're not all against the change. We're for positive change. Jeremiah, thank you very much for calling, and I appreciate it. I'm sorry, we're out of time, everyone. Utrice Lead coming at you right now, and Utrice deals with these issues every single day. Go clear back. Maybe, Utrice, you could take a few moments at some point in your program to talk about what you did with the Sun publication that you were the founder of and how you were a voice of reason for those oppressed minorities and how you were there to help guide the efforts to make people more aware of what they were dealing with. They were dealing with real human beings who needed help and understanding and not marginalized or commodified. Have a nice day, everyone.